Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Her Excellency Marina Kaljurand, the Ambassador of Estonia to the United States. Estonia, along with Latvia and Lithuania, are considered Baltic states. They are three northern European countries east of the Baltic Sea. Since Russia's annexation of Crimea, which was an integral part of Ukraine, the Baltic states, which have sizable Russian minorities, have become concerned about Russia's increasingly aggressive actions in Ukraine. The Kremlin claims that Russians and Russian speakers in Ukraine are threatened and need protection. However, Kiev, Washington, and European capitals believe this is a pretext for Moscow to destabilize Ukraine and to continue annexing more territory, as it did with Crimea. Even though Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are members of the European Union, they are watching events in Ukraine with considerable trepidation. We'll talk with Ambassador Kaljurand about Estonia's reactions to these dramatic regional events and U.S.-Estonian relations. Ambassador Kaljurand has been Estonia's envoy to Washington since September 2011. Previously, she served as Undersecretary for Foreign Economic Relations and Development Aid in Estonia. She was also non-resident ambassador to the Republic of Kazakhstan, ambassador to the Russian Federation, and ambassador to Israel. Ambassador Marina Kaljurand, welcome to the program.
It is my pleasure.
We're delighted to have you. Well, Ambassador, first let me ask you a general question. How does your country, Estonia, view what is going on in Ukraine? First, the annexation of Crimea by Russia, and now Russia's backing of pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine.
Well, I'd like to say that being members of the EU, but also being members of NATO, of course, we share the understanding and the views together with our allies and partners in those organizations. And for us, there is no question about Russia violating international law, the fact of annexation of Crimea, and the fact that the acts that are taking place today in eastern part of Ukraine are also either sponsored or supported by Russian government. And the recent events have changed the world, because what's happening there doesn't correspond to any international norms and the principles with which we have lived since the Second World War.
We read recently where there have been demonstrations in Estonia by Russian speakers.
Demonstrations? No. We haven't had demonstrations.
Okay, talk about then what is going on within your country. Are there any kinds of concerns by the Russian-speaking population? Talk about the Russian-speaking population in Estonia.
Well, I'll start saying that the Russian-speaking population is approximately one-fourth of our population. I'm Russian-speaking. I speak Russian with my mother, and I don't need protection. I'm an Estonian citizen. I live in Estonia. I'm an Estonian ambassador. So for me, there is a huge difference when we speak about Russian-speaking population. There are Russians who have lived for centuries in Estonia, who are part of the country, who are part of the culture, of the everyday life of the country, and there are Soviets who were brought or who came to Estonia during the Soviet occupation and whose understanding might be slightly different. Some of them see Estonia as their home. They see Estonia as being part of Europe and themselves being part of Europe, and they like it. And I think that there is a small part, I don't know the percentage, I don't know the numbers, but there is a small part that shares the views of Mr. Putin that the fall of Soviet Union was the biggest geopolitical catastrophe, and who don't accept Estonia being an independent country. But even without knowing the exact numbers, I know that the number is not big. The children of those Soviets do want to live in Estonia, do want to have the positive sides of living in Estonia. And anyway, they haven't left Estonia. We regained independence in 91, which means that there has been plenty of time to leave the country if somebody doesn't like to live in the country.
Notwithstanding the fact that you're a member of the European Union and NATO, are you concerned about what Russia is doing in Ukraine, and to what extent do you think that they could extend this type of aggression to places like the Baltics?
Of course we're concerned, and maybe we're more concerned because we are the bordering country and because we have the history. What's happened in Crimea was exactly what happened in the Baltic states in the summer and spring of 1940. So we have history that reminds. But at the same time, I'd like to say that being members of NATO, even more NATO than EU, we feel more confident. Mm-hmm. Because NATO has taken already actions to show the deterrence and to show presence in the Baltic states. We have NATO air policing in the Baltic states. At the moment, we are negotiating on having more NATO presence in the region. We need it. Because what we see today is that Russia listens to force, not using force, but showing of force. And the more we have boots of NATO on the ground in the Baltics, the more secure we feel.
Well, that leads me to ask you, are you satisfied with NATO's response thus far and that of the European Union and the United States, which so far it is primarily sanctions, asset freezes, and travel bans? There are threats that there will be more sanctions if, you know, Russia acts more aggressively, attacks militarily Eastern Ukraine. But is that enough? Is it strong enough, the response?
Well, the situation is developing with every minute. We're talking just now, we don't know what will happen in an hour or two. As to the present situation, the discussions in NATO among the allies, we're one of 28. Yes, we're happy with the discussions. NATO is taking it very seriously, and I think that the very specific acts undertaken by NATO, including stopping military-to-military cooperation with Russia and others, are very specific acts. NATO understands how serious it is and reacts appropriately. As to the EU and the United States, we had a meeting of EU foreign ministers, Foreign Affairs Council. Again, EU takes very seriously what's happening in Ukraine. And we have introduced visa bans. We have introduced other sanctions, preventive measures. And we are in the discussion of looking what to do next if Russia doesn't stop the provocations, if Russia doesn't stop putting Ukraine under huge pressure, mm-hmm. with having forces on the Ukrainian border, with having provocators in the country, with doing whatever they can to destabilize the situation in Ukraine.
As some have criticized the EU because, you know, EU is indeed very dependent on gas from Russia, particularly Germany is a bit reluctant to impose more stringent sanctions. How do you see the EU reaction, and are you confident that they will step up if need be?
Again, EU is us, which means that when we discuss all the further actions, we are on the same side. It's not easy to agree always, because it's a body of 28 countries. They all have their different interests. They all have their trade interests and so on. But our feeling is that the EU understands how serious the situation is. And EU is ready to take concrete actions, even if it's at the cost or the economic benefit of the countries. Yes, you're very right. Europe is dependent on Russian energy resources. But at the same time, we have to say that 40% of Russia's budget comes from the transactions they have with European countries. Are we ready to go so far to put embargoes on gas and oil trades? It has to be discussed, but I can say that today Europe has resources to do that. And different countries are discussing it internally within the EU. So I think that if we have to do that, we'll be able to do that. Although it will have costs, and we have to be ready to pay the costs.
Let's turn now to Ukraine itself, the government in Kiev. As we say in this country, they seem to be between a rock and a hard place, because if they do not act, if they're passive in the face of aggression by Russia or the separatists backed by the Russians, then they look like they're not acting in their own interests, and they invite more Russian aggression. If they act, then Russia can say, look, you're provoking us to violence. You are threatening the Russian speakers. They really caught. How do you see their response, and what more can the United States, the European, do to help the government in Kiev?
Well, here I'd like to compliment the government, because so far they have been very determined. They have been calm. Nobody wants any type of war in Ukraine. What we can do, we have to support them. We have to support the government in Ukraine, in Kiev. We have to support it politically, meaning visits, political dialogues, assuring Ukrainians that we don't support any deals behind them or over their heads like it happened in Yalta or in other places. So whatever Ukrainian people decide to do, we support it. Whether they decide to be members of EU or whatever the decisions they are, they have the right to make their decisions themselves. We have to support them economically, because we understand that raising in a recent couple of weeks the price of gas and then trade barriers from the Russian side have hit Ukrainian economy. We know that Ukraine still has the problem of corruption, and here we have to support them. And that's the reason why the EU has decided to promote trade with Ukraine more, even before we signed the free trade agreement with Ukrainians. And that's the reason why we are encouraging Ukrainians to make as many progressive reforms as they can, to be prepared for the May 25th elections, to have open, transparent, democratic elections, because that's the answer to the Russians, who will see that Ukraine has chosen the path and Ukraine is doing their part.
But do you think we will get to that day? I mean, things are so tense now between Ukraine and Russia that one wonders if the breakup of the country is really imminent and the potential for violence and bloodshed very real. What are your thoughts? Is this, in your view, perhaps the first step on a slippery slope on behalf of the Russians and Putin in particular to just start to chip away at Ukraine to try to break it up and then perhaps go elsewhere to try to recreate the empire before the breakup of the Soviet Union?
It's very difficult to say what is in Mr. Putin's mind. We see only what they have done so far. They have the Council of Federation resolution which allows the use of force. We see that they used force in Crimea. We see their acts in Ukraine. I think that yes, Russia is doing everything they can not to allow Ukrainians have elections on May 25th. What we can do, and we have to do everything we can, as I said, with the political support, financial support, economic support, but also with sending international electoral monitoring groups to Ukraine to be present there, to show that we are here, we see what's really happening, you will not be able to deceive us. And even with that, support Ukrainians. They are in a very difficult position. And then there is a bit more than a month left until the May elections. And for them, it is important to have elections, progress, and to be closer to the EU if it's the decision of the people.
Ambassador Kalyuran, you said a bit earlier that you don't know what's in Mr. Putin's head per se, but I wonder if you think that this is indeed an attempt by him in particular to try to recreate the Soviet Empire. As you said, he said that what happened, the breakup of the Soviet Union, was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe, you know, in history for him. And one has to wonder, what's behind these moves? Is he interested in trying to give birth to that so-called Eurasian Union? What do you think is going on, and what is his ultimate objective?
Again, it's very difficult for me to speak on behalf of him, but at least the science show that, yes, he seems to, his foreign politics is very revanchistic. He's trying to create a new union. It won't be the Soviet Union as it was before 91, but another union. He's bribing countries, he's using force against countries, he's using carrots to try to involve countries. Yes, he's trying to do that. And it's now up to the countries whom he's putting under the pressure. It's up to them to decide whether they want to be part of the union, whatever will be the name of the union, in whatever form it will be, but which so much reminds us the Soviet Union, or they want to have freedom, democracy, and normal development.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Her Excellency Marina Kalyurand, Ambassador of Estonia to the United States. And I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Also, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback on guests and topics to PCUSA@voanews.com. Please tell us where you're from and how you listen to the program. Well, back to you, Ambassador Kalliorand. Let's go to the so-called propaganda war, which we see is taking place. More than anything, I think that is what's really going on. There are two narratives. We know that in Ukraine there is, yes, a Russian-speaking population. It's a country that bridges the East and the West, certainly. And it seems that the leaders in Kiev seem to acknowledge that. They even talk about a potential for greater decentralization, greater autonomy that would accommodate those in the Russian-speaking areas. At the same time, you hear from Moscow, the Russian-speaking population is under threat. This government in Kiev, they're just a bunch of fascists, anti-Semites, you know, and this is what is taking place in the media, because, of course, Moscow controls electronic media for the most part, and they are broadcasting this narrative that the Russian speakers are under threat, that the government in Kiev is illegitimate, that they're fascists, and so on. How do you combat this propaganda war at the same time acknowledging, yes, that there are Russian speakers in Ukraine, they have to be taken into consideration? How do you combat, though, the propaganda that Russia is disseminating?
It's a very difficult question, because I absolutely agree with you that the Russian propaganda is strong. And you mentioned electronic media, but I'd like to say that also the TV is under state control.
Yes.
And there is almost no free media left in Russia. And the media spreads. One part of Estonian population is under the influence of Russian media, the bordering parts. And the same we can say about the other Russian-speaking regions of the other neighboring countries. What we can do, we have to tell our narrative. We have to explain what's really happening. We have to answer to the lies with facts. It's not easy, I agree. Mm-hmm. But doing nothing won't change it either. We have international presence in eastern Ukraine. OSCE is reporting daily what's happening there. They're not reporting about the violation of human rights of any minorities, any religious or other groups. So these are just lies. What we can do, we have to tackle the lies with very concrete facts and with the real situation on the ground. And we just have to do it, although it's not easy. And the Russian propaganda machine has been working effectively since the creation of the Soviet Union. They are effective, they are doing it, and we have to respond with all the measures and all the information and data we have.
Indeed. Ambassador Kalliorand, to what extent do you think ordinary people in Russia and Russian speakers in Estonia and Ukraine are buying this propaganda? I mean, can they see through it, or are they really brainwashed by this type of narrative since Russia controls the media levers?
There's a big difference, Russian-speaking population in Estonia and population in Russia. In Estonia, we have alternative channels. There are programs in Russian language, on TV, on radio, internet is free, which means that those people, they see also alternative information. As to Russia, speaking from the time when I was posted to Moscow, when I was ambassador to Russia, yes, Russia is a TV country, which means that the majority of the population gets information from TV, and TV is state-controlled. In that sense, I do think that Russian population is brainwashed. There are a couple of relatively free, or free but controlled by state, radio stations, but their public is relatively small. Internet, again, relatively free, but not free under Freedom House evaluations. But how many people do follow on internet? The numbers are really small. Even if we say that the number of internet followers in Russia has grown twice or three times in a couple of recent years, still it might be 1/5 of the population, not more. So majority, I do think that they believe what they see on TV. They do think that President Putin is doing the right thing, and yes, they are brainwashed.
I want to follow up on a question I posed to you earlier just to get a little more insight from you. Back to what Vladimir Putin maybe is looking to do. Do you think, in fact, he would like to see sort of the breakup of Ukraine, take the East, or just sort of destabilize the country enough to keep Kiev from being able to really govern, and of course using other tools like raising gas prices, coercing Ukraine into an alliance more with Russia and trying to minimize Western influence and certainly discouraging any kind of association agreement with the EU, let alone membership. What about those specific thoughts?
Again, difficult to say what is on his mind, but reading from the signs and reading from the concrete actions, it seems to me that he would like to have Eastern Ukraine, Southern Ukraine, the same way as Crimea, part of the Greater Russia or Bigger Russia, how it is referred to. And I think that official Russia has also said it publicly that they don't have a problem with the western part of Ukraine being more aligned with the EU, but they do want to see eastern and southern part of Ukraine as part of wider Russia. At the same time, in spite of the propaganda and in spite of the propaganda war that's going on in Ukraine, today we see that even the Russian-speaking population in East Ukraine, in South Ukraine, does not want to be part of Russia and sees their future as citizens or residents of Ukraine and sees their future more close to Europe. Mm-hmm. So even although the propaganda war is good, I think it hasn't achieved the aims in Ukraine. And that's, again, one of the parts where we can be successful, disseminating information, letting information from Europe and information about Europe mm-hmm. to reach the Ukrainians.
Yes, and I guess to some extent exposing their misinformation, the lies, when one can be blunt, because we see, again, not to say that Kiev is not perfect. There are many problems. It's an interim government. There's been enormous corruption in the past. But there are attempts. They are making attempts to accommodate. And every time they seem to do so, yes, we will take into consideration greater autonomy for the East. It seems as if it's met by the Russians, you know, with some kind of silence, or it falls on deaf ears, so it sort of exposes their true intentions.
I agree with you that Ukraine is not perfect, Estonia is not perfect, there are no perfect countries in the world, but in their aspirations, Estonia has supported Ukraine with all their aspirations mm-hmm. towards the EU, because we have shared common history mm-hmm. for 50 years, and I think that we could be an example for Ukrainians that a former Soviet republic could in 20 plus years become a democratic country governed by the rule of law, member of the EU, in our case also member of the NATO. So that's the reason why we are cooperating very closely with Ukrainians. We are assisting them in their attempts to have dialogue and integration with the EU, but also with the fight against corruption. We are one of the countries that has very open and transparent government. We were the first country in the world to introduce electronic government. So mm-hmm. we're trying to take all these programs, projects to Ukraine. And as we were assisted at the beginning of the 90s, we'd like to assist mm-hmm. all those who decide to be more integrated with Europe.
Ambassador Kalyurand, in the few minutes we have left, I wanted to ask you about your reaction to the West's reaction, the EU in particular. You know, some critics have said that the EU seems weak in the face of Russian aggression, even the United States. Do you think this sort of hesitance to be more aggressive with greater sanctions, more even some kind of military support for Ukraine, do you think this encourages Putin's bullying and sort of leaves the Ukrainians to their own devices? Do you think they feel somewhat abandoned?
Yes, I agree that maybe the EU should act in a more quicker way, but at the same time, that's a democratic organization, that's a procedure, yes. That's how we work, and we do our best. I just want to say once more that we understand that the situation in Ukraine is very serious. We take it very seriously. What might influence President Putin when he wakes up tomorrow or day after tomorrow, it's important that the West, as you said, the EU, United States, other democratic countries will be united, will speak in one voice, and will undertake the punitive actions, sanctions together. It's not only the United States and the EU, it's also Canada, it's other countries. So as long as we're united and we speak in one voice, we are strong. And President Putin, I think, will listen to those who are strong.
So you think Ukraine can come out of this hole without breaking up?
I hope so. I very much want them to do that. And from our side, we will do everything we can to assist Ukrainians.
And one more quick question regarding this generational gap, which you referred to within your own Estonia, that the younger generation, even Russian speakers, are more interested in affiliation with the West, affiliation with the EU. Do you think that that pertains also to Ukraine, that it's not so much East-West or Russian-speaking versus Ukrainian-speaking, but really it's more of a generational gap?
Yes, I believe that there might be some generational difference also, because people of my age, 50 plus, we were born in the Soviet Union, 60 plus, I don't know if they even traveled abroad. But the younger generation, they have seen the world, they have traveled to Europe, so they see in practical terms what is a democratic country and how it is to live in a democratic country. So I do have very big hopes for younger generations. And I think that they are the ones who will make the world a better place.
Ambassador Marina Kaljurand is the Estonian ambassador to the United States. Well, Ambassador Kaljurand, thank you so much for joining us, for providing your terrific insights.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests, our engineers, with Sam Levine and Robert Conyers. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.